Morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Tuesday, November 26th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The Sitka Assembly is expected to approve a sales tax holiday for this coming Friday and Saturday at its meeting tonight. If the holiday is approved, local merchants will not charge sales tax on purchases made the day after Thanksgiving, often called Black Friday, or on Saturday, November 30th, which the city has declared Small Business Saturday. So far this year, the city has collected more money in sales tax than expected, according to Deputy Finance Director Mike Middleton. Middleton wrote in a memo to the Assembly that if the current trend continues, the city will beat its target for sales tax revenue, even with the proposed tax holidays. The city budget calls for nearly $9 million in sales tax revenue this year. The city usually forgoes about $20,000 per day during a sales tax holiday, Middleton said. Also on the agenda tonight, the Sitka Police and Fire Departments have asked the Assembly to approve the replacement of two outboard motors for Sitka's emergency response vessel. The vessel would be funded by a $50,000 Homeland Security grant. And Assembly members Aaron Swanson and Benjamin Mayasato have asked the city to consider making a donation to the disaster relief effort in the Philippines in the aftermath of this month's Typhoon Haiyan, which killed more than 5,000 people and displaced nearly 4.5 million. Swanson and Mayasato suggested the donation go to the Red Cross Society of the Philippines or a similar organization. They did not suggest an amount. Most Sea Alaska shareholders will get a $713 check or direct deposit in about 2 weeks. This year's winter distribution to stockholders totals $11.7 million. The Juneau-headquartered Regional Native Corporation has nearly 22,000 tribal members. Most live in Alaska or the Pacific Northwest. The majority of stockholders own 100 shares. Payments differ due to status. A Sitka family is rebuilding in the aftermath of Typhoon Haiyan. Felix and Myrna Serrera were safe in Alaska when the storm tore through Felix's hometown of Tacloban in the Philippines in early November. Their house miraculously survived, as did the family members who took shelter there. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
Last week, Myrna Serrera dropped off her husband Felix at Sitka's Rocky Gutierrez Airport for a trip to the Philippines. A long trip. First Sitka to Seattle, then Seattle to Manila, Manila to the Philippine city Cebu, a 5-hour ferry crossing to the city of Maasin, and finally a 4-hour drive across the island of Leyte to Tacloban, to find out what remained of his home in the devastation left by Typhoon Haiyan.
It's a disaster beyond imagination.
Myrna's a distribution clerk at the Sitka post office, Felix a mailman. They plan to retire in 2 years and move full-time to the vacation home they built on the beach in Tacloban, Felix's hometown.
Looks like a bomb went off. Virtually all of the structures, if they were not made out of concrete or steel, are gone. It looks like a 50-mile wide tornado hit landfall and just tore everything apart.
That's U.S. Brigadier General Paul Kennedy describing to NPR how Tacloban looked from the air on November 12th. Listening to reports like this at home in Sitka, the Serreras feared the worst. Felix had a sister and a brother in Tacloban, and a niece and an aunt. After the storm, Felix got a text from his sister in Sweden, who had gotten a text from his sister in Maasin, who had heard rumors from people leaving Tacloban that their family had made it through the storm alive.
But we didn't believe. So we told to Alex, can you go there and check really if they're really alive? Because this is what we're hearing, you know, that they are alive, but we're not sure because that's only a text.
The Serreras sent money for gas so that Felix's nephew Alex could make the 4-hour trek to Tacloban by motorbike. The roads were so choked with debris that it was impossible for cars to get through. They waited and they waited. Finally, they got a call from Felix's sister in Sweden. She had received a text from Alex in Maasin. And through this global game of telephone, this story began to take shape. As the storm had approached, Felix's sister, his aunt, and his niece, along with two housekeepers, had taken shelter in the Serreras' house in Tacloban. The house is a single-story concrete structure, sturdier than most of the buildings around it. But when the storm hit, water came through the door and window. It rose so fast that the five women had to climb on top of a bar.
So what they did is they went up because our house is only one story. So their head was sticking up, and even though their head was sticking up, the water was up to the ceiling. and then they couldn't breathe.
When the water finally receded, everything had changed.
Our house was surrounded with lots of houses, you know. And when she went out, it was so clear. Like we're the only place there that was untouched.
Like and everything else had just been wiped
yeah,
away.
Yeah, she just couldn't believe her eyes. It's just amazing, she said.
They had stockpiled food and water, but the flood had destroyed it or washed it away. Miraculously, a small store in the neighborhood was still standing.
That saved them, but they didn't have water. They ran out of water. They ran out of Pepsi, because that we call it Sari Sari store, that little store that you could go buy, you know, like little things that you
like
need.
Like a convenience store?
Yeah, like that. And then they have to buy beers, so they've been drinking beers. So without water, they've just been drinking beers. That's how they survive.
And that was how Alex found them, when he arrived on his motorbike a few days after the storm. Other members of the Serrera family were not as lucky. Felix's brother, Romy, lived in another neighborhood of Tacloban. Romy was diabetic and on dialysis. He and his family survived the storm, but without food or water or medical care, he couldn't make it through the days that followed.
You know, we expected, but, you know, it's really hard for Felix. They couldn't bury him right away. So what they did, the family, is they just wrap him in, like a cloth,
a sheet.
Yeah. They just wrap him and then just put him on top of my father-in-law's grave. That's the other thing that Felix has to deal with, is to get it right. He needs to get him at least a coffin and, you know, to give him a prayers.
When Felix finally arrived in Tacloban, he found 2 feet of mud inside their house and so much debris outside that he told Myrna it can't be moved without a bulldozer. But Myrna says that's not what matters.
We don't know the future of Tacloban, so... But, you know, life is too short, so we don't really care about the house. But the people that we really care that survived, that was the most important.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
Myrna Serrera is collecting supplies for disaster relief in Tacloban. You can drop off basic first aid supplies, toiletries, or donations at the AC Lakeside Grocery Store. She will also be collecting supplies at her table at the Christmas Bazaar this Saturday, November 30th, at Harrigan Centennial Hall. Alaska fishermen want to broaden the experimental use of cameras and other monitoring devices in the federal government's Fishery Observer Program. Under the recently revamped program, many more vessels, including smaller boats, can now be required to carry an observer at times. A new industry proposal is aimed at making electronic monitoring available as an alternative to carrying that extra person on the boat. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
The federal government expanded its Fishery Observer program this past year. For the first time, that meant halibut boats and smaller vessels, 40 to 60 feet long, could be selected to carry an observer. But according to Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association Director Linda Bankin, that's not feasible for many.
There's a lot of the small boat fleet that simply cannot accommodate another person. They don't have a bunk. They don't have a safety equipment. Just don't have space for that. So we saw a number of people apply for a release to observer coverage on those grounds. Actually, 65% of the boats selected in the first three quarters of the year, which is the data I've seen so far, the 65% of the boats that were selected applied for a release and were granted a release.
Bankin credits Alaska Department of Fish and Game Commissioner and North Pacific Fishery Management Council member Cora Campbell for helping to make sure that relief was available. Bankin thinks the releases were needed to lessen the burden of the expanded program. However, she says it also meant that the National Marine Fisheries Service fell short of its goals for observer coverage. So Bankin says Alpha is working with other fishing groups to pursue electronic monitoring, or EM, as an alternative to carrying observers on small boats. In October, they applied for a federal federal permit to broaden the experimental use of cameras and other electronic equipment.
We all recognize there will continue to be a need for observers on the water, but that there are places, there are times, there is a significant portion of the fleet that is better served by having electronic monitoring to ensure you get representative data and that you get it in a cost-effective way. So we're looking to integrate EM to use it where it can get the data that managers need and can get it in a way that's less intrusive, less costly than deploying human observers.
Federal fishery managers are taking a slower approach to the issue than the industry would like. NIMFS has a small-scale EM pilot program that involved just a handful of participants this past year. Alpha wants to incorporate that into the broader industry-backed project to test technology on more boats. 60 vessels would be the goal for the first year. NIMFS has been considering the proposal, according to Martin Leflad, who is director of the agency's Fisheries Monitoring and Analysis Division. While he won't comment on the industry application while it's still under review, Leflad says NIMFS is also trying to advance EM.
What we're trying to do is improve the quality of the imagery that we're getting from vessels. There's a lot of hype on this EM stuff worldwide, actually, going on right now. And what we've seen is that a lot of work has been done all over the world that has been duplicating the same sorts of things. We want to get out of duplication and actually move this stuff forward. I personally think EM has massive potential and could revolutionize the way we sample if we do it right.
Observers record catch data and other information for use in fishery management and research. Leflad says together, NIMFS and the industry may be able to make some progress on moving electronic monitoring forward. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's it for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. We're going to rejoin National Public Radio. I'll be back with you at 18 minutes after with a local interview. So stay with me.